Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, and you're listening to the Thanksgiving edition of CMDA Matters, which is the weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. If you're listening to this edition on the day that it is released, then I want to start out by saying Happy Thanksgiving to you and to your family. I hope that you have had or will have the ability to set aside some protected time on this special day of gratitude to lead your loved ones in thanking Jehovah Jireh for all that He did in your family's life this year, 2021. And if you're working today or this holiday weekend, I am praying for you, dear friend, praying that God will give you rest as well as supernatural joy in the midst of your busy schedule, with the ability to demonstrate what I am calling gratitude. My hope is that today's interview with our special guest, Dr. Matthew Sleeth, will be an encouragement for you this Thanksgiving holiday, especially if you find yourself with a very long patient list and many hours in the clinic or hospital or on call, maybe even caring for patients and their families who've been struck by the topic we are discussing today, one that our guest today describes as Satan's calling card, the topic of suicide. So let's listen in to our recent conversation as I'm joined by my co-host, Pastor Burt Jones. Well, before I tell you about our guest today and introduce him and to the program, also want to welcome Pastor Burt Jones, who is the Director for Leadership and Church Relations, because Burt is the one who put our guest on my radar. Welcome, Burt.
Thanks, Mike. It's great to be here.
Well, our guest today is Dr. Matthew Sleeth, MD. He's a former emergency room physician and chief of the hospital medical staff who decided to resign from his position several years ago. Maybe he can tell us when that was, to teach, preach, and write about faith and health. Dr. Sleeth has spoken at more than 1,000 churches, campuses, and events, including serving as a monthly guest preacher at the Washington National Cathedral. He's been recognized by Newsweek as one of the nation's most influential Christian leaders. He is the executive director of Blessed Earth and author of numerous articles and books, including the book we're going to talk about today entitled Hope Always, How to Be a Force for Life in a Culture of Suicide. And that came out from Tyndale House Publishers in May of this year. Matthew lives in Lexington, Kentucky, in Bluegrass Territory, with Nancy, his wife of 40 years. So welcome to the program, Dr. Sleeth.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
Well, that was quite a bio, and amazing that you have been speaking in so many places as I read your book, which incidentally, to our listeners, is a very easy, if not serious, read. I actually picked it up on Saturday, finished it late last night, in less than 30 hours. So our listeners, this is not a tough read, but a very important read. So thank you for writing such a great book that we're going to dive into here shortly.
You're welcome. It's not an easy topic, but it's one that culture needs at the moment. So.
And along the way, I learned a couple of bizarre things. Number one, I learned that 15 years ago, Pluto was taken off the list of planets. Now, how did I miss that over the last 15 years? Thanks for letting me know that. And the second thing I learned, which was a good thing for our listeners, is to know, you know, if you'd asked me who wrote most of the New Testament, the largest portion, I would have said, well, that's easy, Apostle Paul. But you pointed out that actually it was a physician, the beloved physician, who has more words in the New Testament than any other writer.
Yes, it was Luke who wrote both the Gospel of Luke and the Book of Acts. So really a major portion. And I think that there's probably a reason for that. And that is that when many things are combined with Christianity, both Christianity and the other thing suffers. And it's called syncretism if you combine, you know, another philosophy or religion or something. But when medicine met Christianity, they resonated together. The ethic of medicine that you find embodied in the Hippocratic Oath completely resonates with the ethic of Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Well, my first question is why you wrote a book on this particular topic. I'm guessing that you're past many years, over thousands, if not tens of thousands of patients in an emergency room influenced you. But tell us about why you picked How to Be a Force for Life in a Culture of Suicide.
I think a couple of things. One is that for the last two decades, the suicide rate has gone up about 2% every single year. And culture doesn't seem to know what to do about that other than to just do more of what we've been doing. And so that's a problem when you have a disease that's, you know, increasing in its prevalence and its incidence and that sort of thing. And the other is, one day I was kind of reviewing the books that were available to folks on this and really was seeing kind of a lack of theology there, even from the Christian books on it. And I did what I think an average person would do today to find out about God and suicide. I typed into the Google search bar, "What does God think about suicide?" And the first article that came up was by a couple of PhD theologians who said that not only did the Bible have nothing against suicide, but that Jesus could be considered to have committed suicide. Well, that's such bad theology. I felt that God was almost kind of dummy slapping me to get me moving in this.
Well, Dr. Slee, thank you for writing this book. And it's one of the most unique books that I've read on this subject. My only problem with the book was I wish you had written it 33 years ago when I first started in ministry. It has so many unique aspects of the book. What do you hope that will be accomplished through this book and the impact it could have on the church and Christianity?
Well, I hope that it wakes the church up. I got to preach at a pretty large church in Louisville, Southeast Christian Church, a couple of months ago. And at the beginning of my sermon, I asked folks there to raise their hand if they had lost a family member or a close friend, not just an acquaintance at work or whatever. If that had happened, at least half the hands went up.
Wow.
When I got to my later part of the sermon about what the church has been doing, I asked people to raise their hand if they had ever heard a sermon on suicide. And it was an eerie thing to have thousands of people in there straining to find one hand and not one went up. And so my real hope is that the church begins to engage in this again, because frankly, we have some answers that are crucial for really fully addressing what's going on with suicide.
I think having been a pastor and having had to do some funerals on suicide, why is it, do you think, that pastors aren't dealing with this subject? You notice you have a whole chapter there written towards pastors. What are some things you hope pastors will learn from this book?
Well, I think that none of us likes to talk about a subject in which we're not familiar, in which we don't feel some expertise on, particularly if we're going to teach about it. And I probably, in the course of a year, at least two-thirds of the folks that I'm talking to are pastors, and virtually none of them have even had a single class on this in seminary.
Right.
And so I don't think it's intentional. And I think if you ask most pastors, you know, is suicide right or wrong, they'd answer that. But as far as fleshing out a theology, as far as fleshing out Bible examples, they would be hard-pressed to do that. And then I remember sitting not too long ago in a office with a pastor at another kind of gigantic church. And he said, you know, we made a strategic decision never to mention the word suicide in our church because we don't want to lose any members.
Wow.
And I was kind of, first of all, amazed that he would articulate that. But I think that that's articulated or not, that many, many churches are just so worried about surviving that they are trying to give people exactly what they want instead of what they need. And what we need is a biblical ethic around this, I believe.
I thought it was interesting you made the statement, it's almost certain that someone you love has either thought about suicide, is thinking about suicide, or will think about suicide. And it just struck me that maybe one of the reasons why pastors aren't covering this subject is because they don't realize
how ubiquitous the problem is.
I think that's part of it. But my goal here in getting beyond the problem is that the church wakes up, and I think that physicians sitting in the church are some of the key people to have this happen. And I just was so happy to have a sermon forwarded to me from Union Baptist Church in St. Johnsbury, Vermont, and a Dr. Joshua Spicer preaching on this. And that's what's really needed, not me, but many, many physicians understand this is their role in the church, is to address this difficult subject.
Well, Dr. Sleeth, as I was reading through the book, I could see myself in different roles, a different kind of reader, different audiences who are reading the book. If there was a poster reader in your mind as you're writing this book, is it pastors? Is it healthcare professionals? Is it the lay public? Who was on your mind?
You know, you're supposed to know exactly who your audience is when you write the book. If you take the example I gave you of being in front of thousands of people and say, who's had a sermon on this? And none of the hands go up. The answer is anybody who the Lord can touch their heart that this is a problem and that they can be part of the solution.
Well, clearly, as you're writing through the book, one of your main goals was to help dispel the myth and the misunderstanding that bringing this up, as you know, I think you mentioned earlier that maybe pastors fear bringing it up, but many of us fear accidentally making things worse. So talk to us about dispelling that myth and what you've learned about actually bringing this up is so much superior as opposed to just pushing down and resisting talking to people about the potential for suicide and suicidal thoughts.
Well, I think that you're absolutely right that people fear making the situation worse. And I think that one of the roles of this book and of physicians is to reassure people and assure them that bringing up suicide never increases the chance that's going to happen. That's just been studied over and over and over again. As a matter of fact, it does the opposite. It says to somebody that you care enough to ask them about a life and death, you know, struggle that they might be in the midst of. And in the book, I even give people a kind of script. It's a script I used in the emergency department of broaching a topic that there's a taboo in society. And so I think that one of my hopes for the books is that it equips people and reminds physicians even that you need to be uncomfortable for a moment, but you might save a life doing that. I was with a group of about 100 high school students when I was writing the book. I was talking to them about another subject. I'd been asked to meet with them. They were all in a church group. And one of them said, what are you working on now? And I said, suicide. And from that moment on, you could just almost hear a pin drop, but they were riveted on me. And it turned out one of them had lost a first cousin that week, and two of them were traveling with a nurse because they were on suicide watch. This is real. It's everywhere. It's not going to go away. It's going to keep getting worse, and silence will only make it worse, actually.
This whole idea of hope always, you do a tremendous job outlining throughout the book the biblical worldview, bringing the scriptures and examples into the book. I thought it was interesting the link that you made between God is light and Satan is darkness. And every time that there's a suicide, there's a picture of Satan there. Talk to us a little bit about that, the connection between Satan and suicide.
One of the things that I found that was interesting in reviewing all the Christian books that I could find about this is nobody went to the beginning of it. And that is that if you open the book of Genesis, here's Adam and Eve in a setting of paradise and told by God, the one thing you can't do is eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And if you do that, you'll be committing suicide. You will surely die. Now, this was God teaching this lesson. So we have to assume that their understanding was perfect or could have been because it was coming from a perfect teacher. And yet, nonetheless, Adam and Eve did this, and they weren't alone. Satan was there lying, telling them that it would be okay. And I think the one thing that I just do is to kind of follow this through. And if you look next chronologically in the Bible, the next instance of Satan trying to get someone to kill themselves is Job. Curse God and die is the poetry of Job for commit suicide. And Satan is trying to do that. And even when Satan has his interaction with Christ, one of the things he's trying to do is to get Christ to jump off the high place and see if it if it won't work out okay for him. And so one of the things that I think we can do coming from a Christian perspective is say, that is a voice and it's the voice of Satan. I don't think you could work in an emergency department long and not come to understand there's good and there's evil afoot in this world. There is black and there is white. And to me, this is the voice of Satan telling people to kill themselves.
In my opinion, that section of the book is worth buying the book for, the scene, you know, the way you outline that, because a light clicked on for me. You know, I've read a lot about this in the past, but your connection there with Adam and Eve and the whole walking that through scripture.
Ananias and Sapphira, yeah, and Judas, and how Satan entering their hearts and death followed.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, if you come at this kind of from the backside, when we have the story of Jesus going to Gerasenes, not a Hebrew territory, and meeting who's termed the demoniac of Gerasenes, somebody who was naked, out of his mind, bursting his restraints and everything. And Jesus takes those demons and he puts them into a giant herd of swine. And the swine go and do something that no animal does on this planet other than humans, and that's kill themselves. Suicide, by the way, is a completely human activity. No one's ever been able to come up with an animal model for it, although they've tortured a whole lot of little animals trying. We alone on this planet choose to end our lives. The other thing I think is, I was talking about this in front of a group of folks who included healthcare professionals who were not Christian. And I could just, you know, you can kind of see when the hackles on people are coming up as I talked about throwing a demon. And I said, you know, isn't it surprising that somewhere around half of the suicide notes have the line, I can no longer deal with the demons that haunt me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you made a prediction. I don't know if you consider yourself a prophet, Dr. Sleeth, but you did make the prediction that we're going to see more and more pushes to destigmatize suicide so that it becomes, as you point out in the past, divorce and pornography and other things that people are pushing to destigmatize so that it becomes more of an accepted choice. Do you really feel with all your heart that that's probably where we're headed in this battle?
I think absolutely. And I believe that really the church has 18, 24 months to turn this around. And if they don't, it will become normalized. By that, I mean, I think that you'll be able to go to the drugstore and they'll be in the greeting card aisles, something like, I'm supporting you in your life choice of moving on. You know, there'll be Orwellian language around it. We'll call light dark and dark light. And that would be bad enough. But the other thing that happens with this, for a reason I can't quite even get the logic of the side that's pushing this, is that children will be included. And I tell people that one of the strangest moments in my life was as a senior resident sitting next to this 11-year-old in the bed who had just delivered a baby and pleading with her to let me call her mother. No one knew that she was pregnant until the morning she delivered, and having to plead with her to let me call her mom, to get an adult on this. But I had to have her permission because was emancipated minor once it was about having a child. And I think the same thing will happen with suicide. And I just can't fathom a 10, 11-year-old going into the pediatrician and demanding that they be put to sleep like a dog. And if people think that's far-fetched, the Medical Assistance in Dying Act in Canada was amended this past year so that somebody could demand to be put to sleep, be killed, even if the only diagnosis was mental illness and even if death was not imminent. And so this is just barreling down on us. And I think we have a very short time to turn this around.
If we have about 24 months or so to turn this tide around, we're going to need the church to step up to the plate and to engage. That includes pastors. You have a chapter on pastors. You have a section there on the church. I was thinking a lot about our members. We've got a lot of Christian doctors who are involved in local churches. What kind of encouragement might you give them to how they might impact the local church that they attend and turn this tide around in the amount of time we have?
Well, first of all, I would I would urge them to understand that they have a unique position and a powerful position in the church because of this long, long history of medicine and healing and the healing arts holding hands with Christianity. You know, when John's disciples wanted to know, was Jesus, was this the one that I baptized? Jesus said, we've opened a hospital. We've got ophthalmology, the blind see. We've got orthopedics, et cetera. And so I think that the physicians need to understand that in a church setting, they really hold a lot of sway. And when they bring their wisdom, not only of scripture, but of healthcare, people are interested and they want to hear and they want to listen. And so I'd really encourage your members to speak up, to ask if they can have the pulpit, to lead some groups on this, and you could make a difference.
You know, Dr. Sleeth, I think our listeners would love to hear and need to hear your background, because from your book and all that you've been sharing, someone would think that from the age of 6, you became a Christian and you've been raised in the church. But that is absolutely not the case. Tell us about your own personal testimony.
Well, I'll try to do a fast version. I went to church as a child, but stopped going, kind of as a tween. And then my family imploded. I had flunked out of school by the time I was in the 10th grade. I did manage to go back and then graduate in an industrial program, third from the bottom of my class.
Oh, dear.
And I became a carpenter and built houses for years and went one day to see about a job. My favorite kind of customers, they had money. The person was Jewish. It was actually a periodontal surgeon. And when their 18-year-old daughter walked in, their worst nightmare began to unfold, because that's my wife, Nancy. And, if you're marrying into a Jewish family and you haven't been born Jewish, one way of getting on the good side of your mother-in-law is to go to medical school. So I said, I'm going to go to medical school. Well, I'd never even taken biology, chemistry, nothing. I'd never had algebra. So I went and saw an uncle of mine. He said, we will make you a resident of the state. You will get a semester in college here, and the rest is up to you. That was this huge break. And after the first semester, I was in the honors program and then in medical school after 2.5 years without an undergraduate degree, which shows you what you can do if you marry my wife. Anyways, we had no religion whatsoever. Well, we had religion. We had the fiddler on the roof slid down the chimney if he saw his shadow. My kids got Hanukkah candy, that kind of nonsense. But I did not believe in God at all. And I was a devout atheist. And that's just the way life went along until things went bad in our lives. My wife's brother drowned in front of her. I had a patient do really scary things, stalking me, and eventually kill his mother, beat her to death and taped her up and put her in a closet. And 9/11 happened. And I woke up to the fact that there was evil on this planet. And evil is a spiritual concept. And so I said, well, if there's evil, where's the good come from? Because, I stood there running trauma codes for Jane or John Doe's, marveling at, 10, 12 people with hundreds of years of experience trying to save the life of somebody they didn't even know what the name is. And that is good. And that is something God is behind. So where does that come from? And I read the Ramayana, the Bhagavad Gita, the Quran, number of other books. And then in a hospital, I found in a waiting room one day a Bible, and I picked it up. I'd never read one. And I said I wanted to, and we didn't have one at home, and so I stole it. And of course, that's the plan of the group that put it there, the Gideons. And I met Christ in the Bible. I opened up the Bible. It was a full Genesis to Revelation. Where do you start reading? Wesleyans call this prevenient grace. My parents named me Matthew. If they'd named me Numbers, we wouldn't be talking. But I started reading the book of Matthew, and I met Christ. And that has changed everything for me. All of my family, my wife and 2 children, became Christians, and we're all in ministry now.
That's a tremendous.
It's probably
testimony.
More of an answer than you wanted.
But, no, I find your story fascinating. Just another story of how God works in miraculous ways in people's lives, and you're a trophy of grace, Dr. Sleeth. Well, as Joshua said to the children of Israel, choose life. Choose life. It's in our hands, and to our listeners, choose to save lives by being prepared. I still have a very vivid memory from my college years that one of our young men in high school took his life, and it was devastating for our youth group, and each one of us dealt with the guilt and what could I have done to have prevented that life being taken. And then another life taken when I was in surgical residency and one of our anesthesiologists had a bad complication in the operating room as propofol, Diprovan, was just coming out and had a child die on the table with an overdose. And just how desperately I wish that I would have come alongside him, even as a resident, put my arm around him and supported him at that time and asked some of the questions that you point out in your book so well. So a very needed book at a critical time like this. So thank you, Dr. Sleeth, for this contribution and for your faithfulness. And I'm hoping that I get to be sitting in an audience someday when you're sharing and preaching from the Word, because you do an amazing job in this book relating some truths from Scripture that just weren't on my radar.
Thank you.
Well, I hope that you felt a degree of challenge, but also some equipping in that conversation with Dr. Sleeth. And we have decided at CMDA to carry his book, Hope Always, in our CMDA online bookstore. You can access our bookstore by going to cmda.org/bookstore, or you can find the link for that book in our podcast show notes today online. This book offers both practical as well as spiritual tools that you can use to help loved ones who are stressed and struggling. I really enjoyed reading it, and I hope that you will get that book today. I'm so glad that Reverend Burt Jones joined me for this week's interview with Dr. Sleeth. As a pastor, Burt's role at CMDA is the Director of Leadership and Church Relations. He's focused on making connections with church leaders to share some of the great resources available through CMDA. He's also the director of CMDA's Center for Wellbeing, which helps Christian healthcare professionals align with God, optimize your well-being, and maximize your influence. This Thanksgiving season, if you are feeling overstretched or overwhelmed by your daily demands, please reach out to CMDA's Center for Wellbeing. You pour yourself out for others every single day, and this is the place where you can be refilled. Our coaches want to help you find the so-called sweet spot of life again, and to help you find or regain what the Bible calls shalom. If you'd like more information, just visit cmda.org/wellbeing or click the link in our show notes on our CMDA Matters webpage today. I hope that you found some space and got the chance to listen to my conversation last week with Dr. Christina Francis about the upcoming oral arguments at the U.S. Supreme Court on the Dobbs abortion case. This important case has the potential to be a landmark decision for our country and for our profession. Please set aside Wednesday, December 1st as a day of prayer and fasting. I hope that you will join me in spending time petitioning Almighty God, El Shaddai, to move with His might and power and miraculously protect the unborn today. You can visit cmda.org/Dobbs, D-O-B-B-S, for more information, and you can download there a prayer guide that we've prepared just for you to help direct your prayer time on December 1st. If you're interested in traveling to our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., you can join me on the steps of the Supreme Court to speak out for our patients, both moms and their unborn children. Please contact CMDA's Advocacy and Communications Department using the email communications@cmda.org for more details. You You know, this is the time of year when many of us are planning and giving our final year-end charitable contributions. As you are praying and planning, I wanted to ask you for your generous support again this year to help your CMDA finish the year strong and encouraged and ready to charge into 2022 robustly and fearlessly proclaiming the gospel of Christ. Your leadership, prayer, and generosity in May and June of this past 2021 provided me and our national leadership team with so much confidence and so much courage to move forward. We have decided to invest deeply to inspire the next generation of healthcare professionals, to expand healthcare missions, and then to increase the advocacy work of CMDA at both the state and the federal levels. As our culture grows increasingly averse to biblical values, the Lord has given CMDA's Board of Trustees and ministry leaders a bold passion to partner with members like you to help redeem our families, our profession, and the church. With our goal for donations in November and December being $670,000, I have great news, as one of our CMDA members has graciously offered to put a match up for the first $100,000. I want to thank Jehovah Jireh for this incredible blessing. If you'd like to help your CMDA claim this matching gift and meet the $670,000 goal, you can just visit cmda.org/give or contact our stewardship team at 888-230-2637, or you can email us using stewardship@cmda.org. Thank you for prayerfully considering your support at this time. I look forward to celebrating the many ways that the Lord uses your generosity at this time to advance the gospel through your CMDA in 2022. Looking forward to next week's podcast. I'm going to be joined by Lori Kirkendall, who serves as the president and CEO of the Medical Institute for Sexual Health. Lori is passionate about the Institute's new K-12 education standards for optimal sexual development. As healthcare professionals, these new standards will be an important resource for you to help your patients be healthy physically and mentally and emotionally and socially and, yes, spiritually. Be sure to join us next week to hear more from Lori. As always, I want to thank you for listening to CMDA Matters. In closing today, I want to echo the words that I shared at the end of that interview with Dr. Sleeth. Choose life. Choose life, Joshua told the Israelites. Choose to save lives, CMDA listener, by being prepared in the midst of an age that's been called the age of American despair. You know, last night I was at the dining room table with my family playing a game, and my 26-year-old daughter, Melody, told me, "Dad, do you realize how many of my friends and coworkers are taking medications for depression and anxiety right now? Nearly every one of them is taking some kind of medication with or without alcohol to help them deal with those problems and the stresses of life." As Christian healthcare professionals, we are in a most unique and privileged position to choose and promote an abundant life for our patients and their families. And Dr. Sleeth's book shows us how we can save lives by being prepared and at the ready. It's my prayer this week that you will seek out ways to be better prepared to help those who are struggling and save lives that might otherwise be taken by suicide. And in doing so, friends, you will bring the hope and healing of Christ to our world. That's what matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. I look forward to sharing with you next week.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.